Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Jordan Malley. Jordan, great to see you. Through our 670 scores scope. Yep.
Where is he?
And it's right over there, Bill.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't know. No. I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, you got it.
Matt, well, you will be getting your book soon.
Left side three. Remy.
Got it!
Levine, turnaround jumper up. Get it! Onions! Baby onions! Kobe White, put him in the Hall of Fame.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your text, your voicemails, anything you got for us, 331-979-1369. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code Locked On, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Welcome back from the weekend, Matt. How are you? What's been up? Getting closer and closer to the drafts. It's the rumors are flying, man. The rumors are absolutely flying. But some really good news at the end of the week about the NBA season. Before we get into all of that today, how you doing, man?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Glad to start another week of episodes with you, buddy. Yeah, less than 10 days until the NBA draft. It's crazy that we're finally getting this close. I got to say, the start of this past weekend was great for a variety of reasons. Sunday really ended the weekend on a sour note. I don't know if you watched that Bears game, man, but it did. You know, Bulls fans were so frustrated with how unwatchable the Bulls offense was for most of this past season. You know what's more unwatchable than the Bulls offense? The Bears offense. Good God.
It's pathetic, man. I'm not going to go as far to say, like, I saw some comparisons between Nagy and Jim Boylan. Like, let's calm it down with that. Let's calm it down with those comparisons. But, man, it's been brutal.
Well, I mean, they're really good at making no adjustments at halftime and then passing the buck after they lose. There is definitely there's a lot of similarity there.
The Bears have way too much talent, way more talent than the Bulls have ever had under Jim Boylan. But yeah, I mean, the press conferences, man, you could definitely make some similarities there. Nagy doesn't say anything compared to like Jim Boylan, who just fed you a bunch of word salads. That was Jim Boylan's go-to too, and half the time you didn't even understand what Jim Boylan was saying. But yeah, it's brutal. Go check out Locked On Bears though, if you want to hear a depressing episode of Bears football or maybe some anger. I'm sure Lauren Cox will have that for us. But the good news in the NBA, Matt, is we're getting basketball December 22nd. That is something that I think if you told me that a month ago, I was going to be like, it's probably not happening. But what are your thoughts on the NBA finally coming to at least a schedule agreement?
Yeah, to me, it is just like a pretty clear cut example of good news, bad news. You know, because of this, we then get this. The good news obviously being that a lot of NBA fans were trying to prepare themselves to not have the 2021 season start until February, maybe even March is something that we had heard, especially coming from the Players Association side, who were saying that they weren't quite ready for that quick of a turnaround, especially those teams that made deep playoff runs. And the other element to that being not just the players needing a break, but the league postponing the start of this upcoming season in the hopes that they would get fans in the stands. The bad news of this situation, obviously, is that because our country is certainly going the wrong direction, trending the wrong direction with getting the coronavirus under control, putting fans in the stands suddenly became very unrealistic. And even with the subsequent reports we've heard about maybe allowing a certain very small capacity percentage specifically catered towards those executive suites and the corporate suites that obviously make the teams their most money as far as game night revenue at the stadium, that makes sense. But you're still not putting 20,000 people in these NBA stadiums this season. Because of that, they were like, okay, well, you know what? Let's just get going. And then that way you can try and prevent the overlap with the Olympics, which has been another big talking point. So great news. NBA is coming back a lot sooner than most of us NBA fans thought. Bad news? Well, the reasons for it being, you know, this pandemic is still ravaging our country.
Yeah, that's for sure. We hit our highest day here in Illinois. For those not living here in Illinois, might be around the country or around the world. Yeah, we had our highest since, I think they said May. It was like over 12,000 positive tests in one day. So that, seeing that alongside this weekend with Shams tweeting out that NBA arenas want to have 25% capacity in states that are going to allow it, I mean, that's super optimistic looking 2 months ahead, not even, a little less than 2 months ahead. I hope at some point throughout the NBA season, whether it have to be the back end of the season or even into the playoffs or the finals, there is some scenario in 2021 where they can have at least 25, 30% or even 50% capacity in these stadiums to generate some revenue. Because as I'm reading through this, money having to be taken out of players' paychecks and put into an escrow account in order to substantiate the league's losses, like, I'm hoping that all of this works out and the players deciding, yes, let's go back and play after playing not even 3 months ago for some teams. Like, all of this is going to pay off for all these groups, the owners, the league as a whole, and the players. So I'm crossing my fingers, man, but it is exciting that we'll have Bulls basketball December 22nd or even Christmas Day. I haven't put out the lineups or the official schedules yet, but I'm very, very thrilled that Bulls basketball in our scope over the next 4 weeks.
Yeah, I'm stoked, man. I could not be more excited, obviously, for the Bulls and the other seven teams that did not get the invitation to go to Orlando. You know, we're in month eight of this abnormally long offseason. It feels like forever since we've gotten to watch our team play. And we also have had all of this change happen organizationally during that extended break. And so I think for the first time in a long time, Bulls fans are actually optimistic about a fresh season starting, looking forward to a fresh season starting, instead of just thinking, all right, well, here we go, about to start another season of watching the Bulls suck and lose and cough up games and get blown out by 20. There's some palpable excitement around this fan base right now. And of course, you know, that'll ramp up even more after we make our draft pick selection in less than a couple of weeks. So the fact that we might get a Bulls basketball game in a month and a week from now, it's like, it's crazy to think about, because it's been forever, but it also feels like it's going to come before we know it. Like, we're going to wake up one day and be like, oh my God, the Bulls have a real NBA game today. And it's going to be such a welcome amount of optimism and excitement for this fan base that certainly deserves it after the last several years that we've been through.
Get on that bird and keep playing.
I think we won the first two quarters.
So PointsBet, the sportsbook here in Illinois, they put out their odds for NBA over-unders for next season. Bulls, 29.5. What's your first reaction to that, Matt?
So 29.5 out of 72, not 82, right?
Correct.
Because of the new agreement to reduce this regular season schedule by 10 games per team. That, to me, sounds, you know, cautious. I wouldn't say it sounds pessimistic. It certainly doesn't sound as optimistic as maybe some Bulls fans were hoping to see a team with a new coach, a new front office, but probably a pretty similar roster unless we see AK do something crazy coming up on draft night. It takes a lot to get those big win swings, and this is a team that just came off of 22 wins in 65 games. So, I mean, that seems about right to me.
I'm going with definitely over. Definitely over. Take it at 29.5 because I think it's going to start to go up. Like, think about that. 30 and 42. That's bare minimum. I think the Bulls are going to be better than 12 games under 500. Maybe I'm overestimating what the Bulls are going to look like under completely different changeover in similar roster.
I mean, you realize
to last
that 12
year.
Games under 500 would be like a 10 or 11 win improvement from what we just saw, right?
See, that's what scares me. That's what scares me is when we talk about jumps from where you went from last season. Historically in the NBA, teams don't make that massive leap of 10, 12, 15 games of improvement. But maybe the Bulls are in a situation where that can happen. Brand new coaching system, brand new front office. You've got a healthy roster for once. Like, all of those things could line up to mean a Bulls jump from 15, 17 wins last year improvement and puts the Bulls around 500 at that point, a little over 500. So I'm optimistic that the Bulls can at least go 30 and 42 next season.
I would also take the over. I'm just saying I think it makes sense as far as where they set the line. Because if you think about it this way, you know, 30 wins out of 72 game season is a 41.5 winning percentage. 22 out of 65 games this past season was a 33.8 win percentage. So again, like, that's a sizable jump when you're talking about your team's win-loss percentage. And maybe I think I don't think it's crazy to say a lot of the fan base would be discouraged by a team that goes 30-42 and still finishes that far under 500. But for the Bulls to become a 500 basketball team all of a sudden this season, it's the same thing that I was saying between 18-19 and this past season. So many things would have to go right for that to happen, because that is an exponential jump. And you just don't see those all that often in the NBA.
The odds are interesting. And yeah, I don't think a lot of people, at least right now, like, once we start to approach the actual, we get the schedule coming out, we approach maybe 2 weeks out from the actual season, you'll start to see these lines move completely from where they are right now. So if you're as confident as I am, go put some money on it. 29.5 games, I think that's an easy cash. Matt, let's talk about the draft pick, though. Let's talk about the Bulls' fourth draft pick, or their interest in trading up or down. You were talking to me before we hopped on the mic saying that there was a report about the Bulls being interested in trading up to number one.
That's correct. And let me pull it up real quick here. This comes from Draft Express's Jonathan Givony. You know, Draft Express, now a subsidiary of ESPN's NBA coverage. And this is something that he posted first thing Monday morning, talking about what he's heard recently with these top picks coming up in the November 18th draft. Some popular picks among executives to make such a move for LaMelo Ball at number one include the Chicago Bulls, currently holding the number four pick, Detroit Pistons at number seven, and Oklahoma City Thunder at number 25. Plus, they, of course, also have a stash of future picks. So most NBA front offices are operating under the assumption that Ball is going number one, either to Minnesota, who keeps the pick, or a team that trades up to select him. Now, Bulls fans have talked, I feel like, from every possible direction about the pros and cons of LaMelo Ball's game, whether or not he is a prospect that is worth trading up to get, because nobody believed that he would fall out of the top three. You know, maybe Minnesota or a team that trades up to the number one pick opts to go with Anthony Edwards instead. I think it's very unlikely at this point that Wiseman goes number one overall. But it was interesting to see that, according to at least what Givony has been hearing from his sources, the Bulls are one of several teams that are at least being whispered about interested in talking to Minnesota about a cost to trade up to that number one spot because they want LaMelo. Jordan, does this latest update, report, rumor, whatever it might be, sway in any way what you had already felt coming into this fresh week and closer to the NBA draft countdown about the Bulls Ball connection?
Number one pick 2020. LaMelo. That good.
Man, I'm still in firm belief the Bulls are going to do something here. And so I'm not surprised. I feel like reading around with so many teams wanting to trade out and trade down, this might be an option for the Bulls to zag when everybody else is zigging, right? It's the same thing we talked about we wanting Gar Foreman and John Paxson to do for the last, what, three fucking years, is to actually make a move and do something outside of what the NBA is saying or the majority of teams are wanting to do. And maybe AK feels this is your best shot, and maybe you can get it at a cheaper value than past drafts or even future drafts of what the number one pick is valued. I feel like, personally, reading around from all these experts and analysts talking, this number one pick, Matt, might be come at the biggest bargain we've seen over the last decade. I mean, what other number one pick has been shopped like this, and you're seeing only two, maybe three assets to move up? Like, it's insane. And with the amount of teams, with Golden State actively looking to move down, maybe Minnesota actively looking down, the Bulls being rumored to do the same, like all of these teams looking to shift at the top, I think it devalues the number one pick. And maybe AK and Mark Eversley are saying, you know what, if we can get this at a bargain cost, we take our guy no matter what, it only costs us a few different assets, like, take the shot.
I'm curious to hit the fast forward button and hear from AK's mouth directly after whatever goes down on draft night goes down, to see what he has to say about LaMelo, if the Bulls end up with him or if they don't. I still think it's very unlikely. there, you know, it's hard to prognosticate because, as we have learned in his short, you know, not even a year's long tenure so far, it plays everything pretty close to the vest. So whatever this latest update was from Jonathan Givony that says the Bulls are one of several teams interested in at least the idea of trading up to take LaMelo number one overall, I still don't see LaMelo, and like you were just saying, as far as like the cost of getting a number one pick this year, maybe being a lot cheaper, significantly cheaper than any of the recent draft classes where like, okay, there's certainly a top tier and in most cases, even a projected easy clear cut number one overall, Zion being the most recent example. I don't know if LaMelo is worth that right now. I think LaMelo is not worth that. That's just my personal opinion, but it goes again to cost, Jordan. So is there a certain collection of assets that you would be okay with the Bulls giving up if it meant trading up to the number one pick to get LaMelo? Because if it is something cheaper than the average cost of a number one pick most years, is it cheap enough to say, all right, I'm okay with the Bulls giving a future first and Kobe White, a future first and Wendell, a future first and Lowry to get LaMelo?
The only player I wouldn't part with to go up to number one to get LaMelo would be Kobe White. He's off the table. Like, he's a critical piece to the backcourt that I think had a lot of success with Billy Donovan in OKC, right? I was listening to Mike Miller, who's now a coach, former NBA Mike Miller, coach from Memphis, and him and RJ Miller were on Ryan Russillo's podcast, I think, and he was talking about one of the most fascinating and one of the most innovative backcourts in the NBA that he likes, and he specifically pointed to Chris Paul, SGA, and Dennis Schroeder's backcourt in OKC the last couple of years and said how much of that worked, and Billy Donovan being able to do that is interesting, and I think he said it's going towards the trend of the NBA over the next 5-7 years if we're not there already. That interests me because now what happens if the Bulls traded up to number one, Matt, and maybe you did give a future first round pick, but you got to keep four? What if you got to keep four? You gave up assets for Minnesota. Maybe you're even talking LaVine in a first round pick to go up to number one and also keep number four. That gives the Bulls two shots. That gives AK two shots right away, right off the bat, to develop two players that are his own, guys that he likes, and not leftovers from the past front office. Or maybe they trade up and not have to get LaVine. They trade number four and they trade back in, maybe to the back end of the lottery. I think that's a real possibility, man.
I suppose it could be. But I feel like I've said this before. I don't love this draft class enough that I want or feel the need to trade up to number one and keep number four.
Do you trust AK and Mark Eversley enough from the moves that they've already made, and they've been limited and nothing has been actually roster specific? Do you trust them enough if they made a move like that, whether it be trading away four in an asset to go up to number one and then trading something else to get back into this first round? Do you have trust in them, or would you be skeptical?
I feel like I would be lying to our listeners and to myself to say yes, unequivocally, without a doubt, I have trust in them when it comes to these draft decisions, because, you know, we could talk about the draft history of Eversley and the Philadelphia 76ers while he was a member of that front office. We could talk about Denver's draft history when Arturas was a member of that front office. But these are new jobs, and both of these men are holding jobs that they have not held before. They both got promotions coming to a new organization. And so, yeah, we can talk about what we have heard them say about their draft strategy, but it's nothing earth-shattering and super enlightening. Yeah, we believe in taking the best available talent that we see on our board when our logo comes up as being on the clock. It's nothing crazy. So I don't know if we should completely trust what's going on and what will happen on draft night with AK, Eversley, Connolly, everybody else involved in the scouting process. I am cautiously optimistic that we will come out of draft night being happy with the results, but there's no basis, there's no previous evidence of these men making these selections for this organization. So it's impossible to say in any way with proof, yes, we should absolutely trust that they're going to get this right. All we can do is be optimistic that they will.
I think there's a lot of scenarios, and I'm just kind of playing them out in my head right now. If they did move up and were interested in number one, and again, like Matt, like AK and Mark Eversley have already proven in their short time here they wear close to the vest. They're going to, they're kind of the snake in the grass, right? And nobody's going to know until the actual move is made. And we've seen that time and time again, even with like the most recent with the Boylan deal or with the Billy Donovan deal. Nobody knew about any of that, but maybe that's part of their new strategies, keeping everything so inside, so tight that you're not really sure what they're going to do. I'm with you though. I think I would have a little bit of skepticism, but if this is a chance for Mark Eversley and AK, and they believe firmly in two players that they really love and have ceilings and feel like the value is there for both of these guys, and even trading up to number one again, I think it comes at a cheaper cost than the past drafts. And I think that's something intriguing as well. If you really love LaMelo and you feel like he's got the highest ceiling, he's got the potential to be a superstar next to guys like Kobe White, if you're deciding to keep Zach LaVine here long term, if you think that's the guy and you want to develop him at 19 years old, I'm down. I'm totally down for it. If you want to trade up to number one, if it's not even LaMelo, if you want to trade up to number one and get your guy, I'm cool with that. But no, that's going to be a critical move that you've made in the first 12 months of being the front office here. I'm down. I'm on board for it, but I would have a little bit of skepticism if they started moving more pieces. But I want them to, Matt. If they're confident, I want them to. And they see value and they don't really like what they see on the roster as far as pieces they're trading away, I'm cool with it. They were brought in here to make seismic change, and that comes with the roster as well. So we may see that on draft night or a little bit before.
Yeah, we could. And again, I think most of this conversation to me is just I'm just getting so antsy and eager to find out what happens, because none of us know what's going to happen between all of the different smoke that you get leading up to the NBA draft night about potential trades and which prospects are rising and which prospects are falling on people's draft boards, and the fact that Bulls fans are learning that we don't know what AK is thinking until after it happens and is official and then tells us what he was thinking. So there's a lot of anticipation right now. And again, cautiously optimistic. But as far as this latest rumor or report, whatever you want to call it, from Jonathan Givony about the Bulls being one of several teams looking to trade up for Melo, I would still say I am leaning against being in favor of that being something happening, because as much as you were talking about how maybe you could get a number one pick trade up this year for cheaper than most years, I still don't think it will be cheap in a way that I say I'm comfortable with the cost compared to the excitement I have for the prospect you're getting for that cost.
What do you think it's going to cost? What do you think Minnesota would ask from the Bulls, hypothetically? If there's a couple scenarios you've got in mind, what do you think the actual cost is of that number one pick?
I would venture the guess that it would cost this year's number four, a future first with maybe some kind of protections on it, and one of the core pieces of the Bulls roster right now, Kobe, Wendell, Lowry, or Zach.
I'm cool with it if it's four. Heavily protected next year, less protections the year after, but there's got to be some major protections on a future first round pick if we're also giving up four and an asset for number one. That's almost too rich. Like, if you're talking that much, but I mean, if they like their guy there, man, I'm cool.
Yeah, but
with
see,
it.
Jordan, like you were saying before, the number one pick has always had such allure to it that it maybe it comes a little bit cheaper this year. But I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't, because it's the mystery box, right? The number one pick, it's so valuable. In some cases, even more valuable than known assets that you have because of the allure of the mystery box. I don't know if it'll come significantly cheaper than it would in previous years, where we all were kind of in agreement who the top one or two or three prospects are, and this year is a little bit more ambiguous. I still think a number one pick is always going to cost you something substantial and more than you would want.
I need to go do the research over the next couple of days to kind of see that. What is the value of first round picks over the past, let's say, like the past 10 years, or the past 20 years since 2000? And I would also like to see, like, what are the odds that a guy in the past 20 years has been an all-star more than once, has been named to all NBA teams, has been a superstar in the league at one compared to four. What are the odds? Like, that would be me playing the odds. And if they feel like, hey, over the past 25 years, it's screaming that moving up to number one compared where you're at number four, the value, the guy that you're getting there, the ceiling is so much higher. It's almost a guarantee compared to number four, or maybe vice versa, or maybe it's closer. Like, yeah, there's been as many guys, or, you know, slightly less guys turning out to be two-time, three-time, five-time All-Stars at four than there has been at one. I need to go do the specific research because I think that's interesting, especially with the amount of people that, or amount of teams that are going to be involved in wanting that number one pick. But again, if it's for LaMelo, man, I'm all in. I've said this for months now. I'm all in. I think he's got the highest ceiling of anybody in this draft. And if AK is the balls and Mark Everly's got the balls and they want to roll the dice right away, I'm on board for it.
I could be talked into it, rolling the dice right away. Again, I think Bulls fans have been kind of on the fence recently about how quickly we want the roster turnover compared to, I think most all of us were in agreement of how quickly we wanted the front office turnover and then the coaching staff turnover. Like, we were all on the same page there. Like, Gar, John, thanks. Your time is up. Jim Boylan, fewer thanks. Your time is still up. This is interesting. And, you know, like, our pal C Red Fred put up a poll yesterday that asked, you know, which prospect would you be the least excited about getting if he's the one we end up getting on draft night? And, you know, I think it was LaMelo, Denny, Toppin, and one other. And it was basically like an even split. Like, it was like, it was, I think it was four options, and it was like 30-30, and 25 and 25 or whatever. Like, it was split. Bulls fans right now not on the same page about what they want to see this team do on draft night and what player they want to come away with. But that's not a bad thing. It's, you know, it's interesting. It's always interesting to see Bulls fans have varying and widely varying opinions on, from a perspective of the roster and the present and future of the roster, what are the best decisions that they should be making? So I'm predicting that some people will be very happy on draft night in this fan base and some not so much. And some might even be pissed off on draft night, depending on what shakes out.
Number one pick 2020. Because LaMelo. It's that good.
Let me give you some odds on who the Bulls' first draft pick will be. This is coming from PointsBet. And then I want to talk to you about our trade from late last week and what the reaction we got from it, which I thought was intriguing, Matt. Like, there's a ton of reaction there that I didn't think was going to come. So we'll talk about that in a second. Let me give you these odds, though, first. Actually, let me ask you, since you probably haven't seen this yet, who do you think is the most favorable right now for the Bulls to draft?
My guess would be Denny Avdia.
That is correct. So Denny is 2-1. This is all coming from PointsBet. 2-1. Obi Toppin, 3-1. James Wiseman, 6-1. Killian Hayes and Isaac Okoro and Tyrese Halliburton, all 10-1. LaMelo Ball, Anthony Edwards, both 12-1. Devin Vassell and Onyeka Okongwu is 16-1. Vassell coming 14-1. Man, I would hop on it. Like, that, if you've got
all of those odds, make sense to me, I think.
I mean, man, if you firmly believe the Bulls are going to draft LaMelo, whether it be at four or at one, 12-1 is such good odds. I might put some money on that, man. 12-1 for my guy LaMelo. $10 to win you $120.
I'll let you say you told me so on our podcast after the draft. But right now, I'm telling you that you're throwing that money away. You put odds on the Bulls taking LaMelo.
It should be exciting. I love hearing that rumor, though. I love hearing that rumor. At least it's out there.
And which, by the way, I just saw this come across my Twitter feed. If our listeners want some more juice and follow-up content on that whole report from Jonathan Givony of Draft Express, I just saw that he sat down with Zach Lowe for the next Low Post podcast episode that is dropping later today, probably Monday, mid to late afternoon. So if you probably want to get some more intel on whatever that was in his column that Givony wrote, I'm sure Zach Lowe will be pressing him for more info and speculation on that. So check out the next upcoming episode of the Low Post, and we might get some more intel there.
I will be definitely listening to that. And again, reminder for you, John Bryant, new assistant coach on the Bulls, also really, really good friends with Mike Schmidt, who works with Jonathan Givony. Both of them from Drafts. I keep forgetting it. Draft Express.
Draft Express.
Yes, there we go. Okay, let's get to this trade before we get out of here real fast. From last week, we threw out a trade idea, a three-way trade involving the Bulls, Nuggets, and Pelicans. Let me remind you real fast. The Nuggets getting Jrue Holiday, the Bulls getting Michael Porter Jr., 2020 13th overall pick, 2020 Denver's 22nd overall pick. The Pelicans get Lauri Markkanen, Gary Harris, and the Bulls' 4th overall pick. Matt, the poll reads, who wins this trade? Comment what you would change, if anything. Coming out with the top result is 34% of people believed all three teams would win. And then it was pretty split. I threw out a one winner and two losers, or two winners and one losers. A lot of people saying second favorite is Pelicans or Denver, and the Pelicans win this bet and win this trade and the Bulls lose it. Were you surprised by any reaction that we got from this or any follow up from it?
I mean, not necessarily surprised. Because again, like I was saying, just like with Fred's poll about which player do you not want in the draft, even splits, man. And then even some of the replies, you know, ranged from hell no to, yeah, I'm doing this in a heartbeat if I'm the Bulls. It's a perfect microcosm. And I think it reminded me similarly of that one that we did a couple weeks ago that involved Zach LaVine and Caris LeVert in another three-team trade. Because in that one also, we got replies ranging from, hell no, this is an awful trade for the Bulls, to, yes, I would do this immediately. I think it hinges largely on this one in particular, what you feel about Michael Porter Jr. And whether or not Denver is actually willing to part with him is a different hypothetical entirely. And maybe it makes this hypothetical trade a moot point if they are not willing to part with him. If essentially what they're getting by parting with such a young, exciting prospect is a veteran and kind of like not quite a star, but a competent veteran like Jrue Holiday. But Bulls fans have varying opinions about Michael Porter Jr. A lot of them were pissed that we passed on him on draft night. And, you know, after a couple of exciting games for Denver in the bubble, are sitting here, you know, a year or two later saying, I told you so. We should have taken Michael Porter. And some of them are saying, I still don't want to touch anything about Michael Porter Jr. because his long-term career trajectory is still very much a risk because of his back issues. So I think that is the biggest factor here, even more so than how Bulls fans feel about Lowry, who is, you know, the big piece that Bulls are giving up in this hypothetical trade. Because there's a big, you know, range of opinions on Lowry as well. Shout out to whoever was coming at me on Twitter the other day saying that I give Lowry too much love when talking about trade hypotheticals. But to me, is the key on this one is Michael Porter Jr., don't you think?
100%. I also think there's a factor, too, of what you feel the number 4 pick is worth. And also, too, the timeline of what the Bulls are looking to do over the next, what, 2-3 years? Like, man, we're in year 4. I don't think, like, I know we have some patience, but I'm also at the same time like, man, I don't want to wait another 3 years to develop a bunch of guys and hope that that's the path forward. We'd be in year 7 of a rebuild if we're talking about that's when our peak is. I think we've got the assets, enough assets here with the changeover from the front office and the coaching staff to make something work faster than that. I think the Bulls are on a path to do that. And we got to continue to remind people, especially people who've checked out of the Bulls the last couple seasons, year 4. This is year 4 of the rebuild. Year 4. Let's not extend it any farther than we need to. And I think that's something that we've got to come to terms to with is, are they actually going to be players over the next couple of seasons in free agency? You don't want to have a bunch of young guys under small salary caps and having to worry about contract extensions. And I think that's what it comes back to Lowry. It's like, Lowry, you're going to have to make a decision on him. I don't think Bulls fans necessarily hate him, but understand the fact that you want to keep everybody, but you can't. And Lowry's contract's coming up the soonest. And I still think the Bulls front office has no idea what they have in him. And you may have to pay out a decent chunk of money for a guy you still don't really know what he is. That's where I'm at with it, though, Matt. Like, but I agree with you. It does come back to Porter. What do you think the Porter ceiling is? And I trust AK's opinion on Porter because he was the guy that gambled on him. And if he believes trading for him there is the best way to go, then I'm all in. He's got the most experience with Porter. He drafted him there. He turned him into a short-term success so far. So I'd be all on board for that.
It's harder for me to just say absolutely hands down, you know, pull the trigger on this trade. it would be an easy yes were it not for the red flags that had Michael Porter Jr., a former projected number one overall pick, to fall all the way down to the mid-teens. Like, I, you know, to me, that's still a flag. The fact that that many teams passed on him. And if it turns out that AK was right to gamble on him when he did and say, okay, potential risk versus potential reward, where we are and what's on the board, who's on the board, it makes sense to see what we have with this kid. And I think, you know, AK was absolutely right in doing so at the time. You might get a steal if he stays healthy. Then you could very much say, wow, what, you know, what a steal with the 14th pick. It's harder for me to say that. And it's been kind of annoying for me to listen to all these Bulls fans say, oh my God, we should have. I can't believe we passed on Michael Porter Jr. Watching some of his, you know, games in the NBA bubble that were like, okay, it's a handful of games. Any player can look good over a handful of games. It's not a big enough sample size for me to say, oh my God, the Bulls totally blew it. Because if the Bulls blew it, then so did 13 teams making their selections before he finally fell off the board. I still have not forgotten that.
Yeah, the ego thing bothers me a little bit too. Even most recently in the bubble where he was like, yo, I need the ball more because I dropped 19 points in one game. And it's like,
right.
Excuse you? Check yourself a little bit, man. Right. Like, you got Jokic and you've got Murray.
On a team with an MVP candidate in Nikola Jokic.
And Murray dropped 41, too, before he made those
comments.
Jamal
Murray's dropping 40 points every night in the playoffs.
Yeah.
But yeah, this kid needs to talk about how he needs more shots. Also, I mean, come on. He thinks COVID is a conspiracy. I don't want that nonsense in my team.
Yeah, I hear you on that. The interesting thing would be going back to what the play style would be then. Then would they run a lineup out there of Kobe White, Zach LaVine, Michael Porter Jr., Otto Porter Jr., and Wendell Carter Jr.? You got the three juniors out there playing. Is that your starting five?
All of the juniors.
Like, that's an interesting starting five, man. That's super lanky. Super lanky. I don't know about the defensive side of things, but super, super long, could be switchable on defense, and a whole hell of a lot of scoring. But that's a lot of guys that need the ball in their hands.
Certainly those who were expressing their concerns about that trade from the Bulls' perspective was, dude, you know, if you throw a Michael Porter Jr. in there with your already, you know, shall we say, vulnerable defense in your backcourt, that could get pretty ugly pretty quickly for the Bulls from a defensive perspective.
Last thing, just last thing on this. Do you think the Bulls are going to run a lineup out there of the three guards similar to OKC last year, or do you think that there's a scenario where they keep Lowry and they keep Markkanen and they keep Carter and they run more of a two guard and try to find their two-way wing at the three? Because everything that I'm reading seems like they want to really try and push Otto Porter to play more minutes at the four and sort of maybe use him sort of how they used Gallinari in OKC, and maybe to some extent like how different players were used, like Michael Porter Jr., for example, in Denver, were switchable at the three and the four. What do you think the lineup is going to look like? Are the Bulls going to go three guards, or are they going to still try and play with this Carter Markkanen thing?
I think you're going to see a lot of different looks from Donovan out of the gate while he tries to figure out what works. Because I think the reason you saw a lot of three-guard stuff with him at OKC this past season with CP3 and Schroeder and SGA is because he figured out that was, you know, that was three of five of one of his best, most efficient lineups. It was the latest example of Donovan kind of building his strategy and his scheme around the pieces that he has to work with and based off of the pieces he has to work with, which is going to be very refreshing for Bulls fans after so much Jim Boylan saying, no, this is the system, and I don't care who we have as far as personnel. This is our system, goddammit. So that's why you saw a lot of three-guard stuff, because Donovan realized that that was the best way to play to their strengths. Maybe that happens if you're talking about Kobe White and Zach LaVine and then another small guard that they might take in the upcoming draft. It's possible. It's also possible that Donovan looks at the usage, and I'm talking percentage and style of usage, of Wendell and Lowry last season and said, that is a crime. We have to fix that and see a lot more pick and roll stuff, whether it be trying to get Kobe and Zach more adept at doing that, or if they take a playmaker, a point guard with this number four pick in the draft, putting that person in and saying, okay, we need to get more pick and roll stuff going, and we need to make our bigs a lot more useful than they were for this squad last season. So again, I think it'll largely just depend on what Donovan does a few weeks into evaluating what works and what doesn't.
That makes a lot of sense. I think they need to find that switchable guy. They need to find the guy on defense that they can switch 1 through 3 next to Zach, where Zach can guard the third best shooter, or the third best scorer among that backcourt. And that's kind of what OKC had success with. Like, SGA could switch on the three and the primary scorer on defense at times. Chris Paul could switch 1 through 3. And they also had guys at the four that could switch and guard three or four or even down to 5. So I think that's what they're going to be looking for, is guys that can guard multiple positions. I'm intrigued what they're going to do with Otto Porter Jr., though. I think that's going to scream a lot of what this Bulls team is going to shape up and look like in the future. And I don't think we necessarily have that third guard next to Kobe and next to Zach yet, which is intriguing about the draft deciding what they're going to do. Speaking of the draft, as we get out of here, Matt, Locked On NBA Mock Draft dropping, the first 10 picks dropping on Wednesday. So go check that out. Fantastic. You'll be able to hear our results and our feedback of the first 10 picks, including who we selected on Wednesday's episode. Tomorrow we're going to do mailbag. So drop all your voicemails, your questions, your text messages, your tweets, anything you want to get to us, one mailbag. And maybe we'll do one more mailbag next week. But make sure you drop your questions at 331-979-1369. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful day. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com